podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny Review system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
So it's all for play for still.
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Hi, villains, and welcome to For the Love of Palmer Grab Podcast, as my microphone continually and incessantly tries to focus for whatever reason that is. Just give it a wipe, just in case. There we go. Anyway, we're back again. This is the third podcast that we've done in the aftermath or the shadow of that Bournemouth debacle at the weekend. And I've got my catharsis from two podcasts, but I thought it would be remiss of me not to get Paddy's views and Paddy's points on that game, should I say. And also look, as I say, to see potentially if there's any kind of shining light as we do go towards Everton. And we will be turning the page very much so after this podcast towards Everton in the coming week, which Paddy will be in attendance for, won't you, Paddy?
You can see that I'm super excited about going to Villa Park this weekend.
As I said to you in a text message, it could be worse. Like, you see the guys down, you see the Villa fans down in Ghana, you see all the Villa fans over in the US, and they don't get an opportunity to go to Villa Park. They'll rip your right arm off to get to go there, and it should be a privilege every time, regardless of how
it is. It is a privilege, and I know every time there's a big break between going there and sitting in my seat, it just brings a new hope and a new dawn, especially at this time of the season. But I've had that new hope and new dawn absolutely sucked out of my body last weekend. Mm. So as a result, this is not going to be pleasant.
Yeah,
we're not going to be here for a long period of time. I know you always open a podcast saying this will only be 15 or 20 minutes. I think this will only be 15 or 20 minutes because you've said it all at this stage. But it's broken me. I tell you. I listened to your initial one after the game ended. You said I had to drive to Tyrone to work. That was the longest drive I've ever done for a number of reasons. And I got there and I called a pint at the bar because I was working early Sunday morning because I said I'll have a pint. Could lead to three, could lead to five. I didn't even finish the pint. I went to bed. I was just disgusted. Yeah. Because, you know, This is our love. This is our passion. And, you know, we spoke during the week about, you know, well, I even mentioned in the team sheet tantrum, we could be looking at Jacob Ramsey playing for England. We were talking about Europe last week. I said we'd finish seventh. And then you're going, what the hell was I thinking? Yeah. You know, we go out on Saturday with a couple of questionable decisions. Not for me. I still don't think we've anyone better of playing that lone striker as Danny Ings. But at the centre half was a questionable one for me. And there seems to be a little bit of niggle within the squad. And I'm not too happy about it.
Where is Paddy? Talk to me, because I've seen a ton of this in social media. And maybe I'm just blind to it that I don't see it. But where does this come from? Where is this whole fracturous squad not as harmonious as it should be piece comes from?
Well, the first thing happened when we were still on air doing the team sheet tantrum, and Morgan Sanson put a message out on his Instagram saying he's fit and ready to go, even though he'd been left out of the squad. So that was questioned in the presser afterwards, not the one on camera, but the one for the written press. And he said, yeah, he was fit and ready to go, but I didn't pick him. That was it. But there was obviously something there. Something rattled him to put that out on Instagram. And it was wrong by him because he rose to it. Whatever is going on with Tyrone Mings, Mings has not rose to it, but Gerrard has. And I think I thought it was poor to say the thing that he did to the written press after the game.
I think I agree with you with Ings' part. Look, I think Sansan has that petulance. Like, he's shown to be petulant previously. He showed to be petulant under Dean Smith and under Steven Gerrard. Remember when he started kicking bottles? Remember he started... Did he flip someone the board at some stage in the dugout? Or did he do something?
He did something.
Yeah, there was something else kind of stupid that he did. So I think he does have a fiery petulant side to him. Listen, look, I know off camera, lads, you should see me playing football. I'm the most petulant little bitch you've ever seen on a football field. You know, and I will two-foot you if I get
here,
if the red mist comes.
So, I was exactly the same. If I was taken off in a match, I was spitting teeth. Like, I was going absolutely ape. But look, I didn't play at the level that Morgan Sanson did. But any problem I had with the manager was spoken to the manager, which leads me to the issue with Tyrone Mings when he comes out and says, when Tyrone is back to his best and looks me in the eye, and tells me that he's ready, he'll get opportunities. I'm like,
that was strange. I don't even know where to unpack that one with. I have no idea how to unpack that, unless Tyrone, like, you could think of it two ways: the taking the captaincy is completely broken Tyrone Mings, or that Tyrone Mings got the PR side of it perfectly with his tweet, and he dealt with that, and like, so that he was dealing with what he needed to do and his disgruntledness behind the scenes, and then Gerrard just aired the laundry. Now, Gerrard has, he did it at Rangers. Like, we can't, like, we're not going to sit here and say that he didn't do it and just completely rewrite the history of the man, but he did. He did air laundry in Rangers, and he threw players under the bus at Rangers, and it was something that he got criticised for in Scotland. And I thought he'd kind of grown out of that, or I thought he'd grown above that, should I say. But this was like, this is a comment that everybody was going to latch at. Everybody was going to latch up
on it. And he knew that.
And it was an unforced error.
He absolutely knew that that was going to be picked up on and spread all around the place. But to come out and say it in a week that you're taking the captaincy off a guy who's obviously a little bit broken, as you said, and in the same breath, he was talking about after the match and saying, that's on me. In order to take pressure off the players, that's on me. Yeah, it is on you. You continue to allow the players cross the box into 5'10" Danny Ings with 4 or 5 6'4" beasts around them. 31 times. 31, whatever it was. It was over 31. 32 times.
32 and 6, and 6 were successful.
It depends on some of the definitions of successful are, if it overrides everybody and gets the other fullback on the other wing, that's deemed as a success. So look, he maintained that was the way he was going to break them down, because the book stops for him. He stands up at the side of the pitch, calls John McGinn and went, yeah, no more crosses into the box like that. We're either crossing early and letting them run onto it, or we try and play through them. And I think it was probably the 32nd cross went in behind the defence. And they absolutely shit themselves, because they were just creaming it up all day. And it was absolute free for all. One fella swiped and missed it. One fella kicked it up in the air. It was just carnage, because we had done something different. And it was the only different thing that I could see. Like, that is, like, I've been a manager, albeit not at that level. But if something's not working, it stops with the manager. With that decision, players don't go out and say, today I'm going to get to the byline and cross the ball in to these guys who are 6'4", 6'5", and let them head it out. They know that this is going to happen. Somebody on that pitch has to say, Stevie, this isn't happening. What? Where do we go from here? He took off JJ at halftime to bring in Buendia to try and play through the middle. Nothing. It ended up going out wide as it was, because whoever it was would pick it up and end up playing it out to the fullbacks, who eventually would put it in to the middle for someone to head it clear or head it out for a corner or whatever. And it just didn't work all day long. And if you remember during lockdown, we played Burnley. We did the exact same thing. And everyone went, Dean Smith is clueless. Dean Smith sent him out to do that. Yeah, Dean Smith did. But now, Steven Gerrard is doing the exact same thing.
Paddy.
With much better players.
Did Dean Smith send them out to do that? Did the players do, or did the player do the players revert back to what they're comfortable with and to panicky stuff like that? Did they revert there after 3 minutes? No. I still don't, like, there's a lot of there's enough blame to go around to fill an Olympic sized swimming pool with this one. I think with that game at the weekend, I definitely think that the manager had so many unforced errors in what he said afterwards. Kanza was a poor choice. The two big choices he made, Ings and Kanza, just did nothing for the whole game. The other choice that you could potentially say was the fact that he started with Jacob Ramsey. We spoke about that, maybe not starting with Douglas Luiz. Jacob Ramsey couldn't get on the ball at all. I wonder, and I just can't be a situation where Steven Gerrard said there, yeah, let's keep crossing it. I think the players just didn't do it. And if they were told to keep crossing it and they didn't change it up themselves, well then, like...
The coach in me refuses to believe that he stopped them at any point crossing the ball into the box. He had to have thought, one of these is going to go in. One of them is going to come in. Because I guarantee you, I speak to the fella used to sit beside me at the matches, and he used to say, why does Petrov always go sideways? He's a crab. He only goes sideways. He only passes the ball sideways. Because that's what he's told to do. When Petrov was with Celtic, he went forward and he brought the ball forward. He was told not to do that when he played for Villa. Neil Lennon was the same. There's certain players that do that. And they're told to do that. The managers tell them to do that. They change their game because the manager tells them to do it. The manager is 100% wrong here. He told them to cross that into the box as often,
Paddy,
as they could.
But you just said a moment ago, they did this under Dean Smith too. That's why I'm asking the question. And it's the majority of the same players that are calling the shots out there with regards to this. You change Matty Target for Luka Dean, and you've got Matty Cash on the other side. And essentially it was the same three in the middle of the field. And yes, we've got Diego Carlos back there now at centre half. So, like, these players are doing this under two separate managers, and it's mindless stuff. And that's why
The mitigating factor in both of these games is we made a bullshit schoolboy error and conceded early. And that is what has caused the mayhem of trying to go and chase the game after 90 seconds to be not tuned in. For a lad to allegedly leave the field within 90 seconds and get back on to defend the corner to take his fucking jewellery off? If that's true, that's disgraceful. Like, you've got one job. You prepare yourself. Well, you what?
I think the jewellery piece was from some American commentator. That's where that came from. And then there's another one.
If it's true,
he apparently did leave the field prior to the corner with a bloody nose. Then that was the other thing. So I don't know what it was. All I know is he was standing in a 6-yard box when the ball went in, and I didn't know that until I actually saw it last night live in the stream. That wasn't fake, or that wasn't made up. That wasn't to be sensationalistic last night. I was there and I went, why have I seen his name marked there? And then I went, wait a minute, he's supposed to be off the field. And when I was watching it back earlier, then I went, I must have made a mistake there. And I looked at it and I went, he fucking was on the field.
If he went off with a bloody nose, he should have been sitting on the ground getting that treatment, not off at the side of the pitch getting the treatment. Yeah. So I don't believe that's the case. Whatever it was, if he left the pitch, and nobody is to show me anyway he left the pitch, because I can't see it. I went back and had a look at the first few minutes, because I'm never looking at that whole 90 minutes again. I'm not as mad as you. I'll do it for you, Paddy. So, look, ultimately, that goal and the absolute calamitous defending is what has us at this conversation. And how many times did we go behind early last season? It has to end. It has to. We can't continue like that.
You're right, Paddy. You're right. The first 90 seconds are exactly it. And I spent a lot of time on Twitter during the game going, lads, Kanza needs to be a small bit better. And people were saying, but Kanza isn't the reason that Coutinho isn't doing anything up there. Where's Coutinho last seen?
Lerma is the reason Coutinho didn't get a look in, because he followed him around the pitch. He followed him around the pitch.
Danny Ings followed him around the field as well, and the two of them were literally holding hands for the whole game.
And what didn't happen was when Lerma dropped into that position, all of the other vacant positions weren't taken up. We just didn't notice it. Most people watching didn't notice. Oh, Coutinho's gone missing. No, he's not. There's a fella wrapped around his neck every time the ball comes up.
And he did a bloody good job. And we played triangles in a 4 foot square, like as if we're playing five a side there for parts as well. But anyway, that's beside the point. Fact, we conceded in the first 90 seconds, allowed Bournemouth to file six people back behind the ball. We had no creativity. We were taking shots from outside the box. Boubacar Kamara, I completely forgot about it, but Boubacar Kamara had a shot in the second half. Was it the second half? It was. And very nearly went in from long range. I didn't even remember it until I watched the game back, but that's what we were reduced to, I think, for long periods of the game because we were pumping balls into the box. It was the hope in hell we were going to win it.
And to be fair to Danny Ings, the best chance of the game fell to him, which he created himself to make that space in the box, albeit he hit it straight at the keeper. But that was our best chance of the game. I don't remember a better chance than that.
McGinn had a long range shots effort. Target.
Yeah, McGinn had a long range effort, went 20 yards wide, JJ something similar. As you say, Kamara was probably closer than that, but you know, all in all, it was depressing stuff, and like, I've deliberately stayed off. I know you are not capable of doing it, but I literally put the phone on airplane mode and went to work on Sunday because I just couldn't deal with the negativity and the backlash, and here I am giving negativity and backlash. So there you go. This is my way of dealing with it.
I'll be honest with you, I wasn't as down as a lot of people from the point of view of, like, I could deal with us losing. I was just annoyed with the way that we lost. But like, literally, and I know it might sound silly, but I was fortunate enough to be able to watch it back later on that night. I didn't have to wait for it to come out on Villa TV. And when I did watch it back, I went, okay, like, this, there's so much to unwrap this, but like, I can't fix it now, kind of a thing. Whereas if I'd waited all night and like you, I kind of stayed off social media as well for a bit that night after I got it out of my system. But I'm a bit more optimistic about the Everton game. I think that we can kind of say that Bournemouth was anomalous from the point of view that it's a tight stadium, it's a tight pitch. It's like do you know what someone actually remarked on the commentary? It's like what Highbury used to be. It's just that it's a weird field that you don't kind of get much space in. And then when you have six behind the ball. So we were the masters of our own downfall. But at the same time, you go to Goodison at the weekend and there's a bit more space. And if the team learns from this... we're not going to Villa Park. Yeah. The team learns from it. Well, then, you know, there is green shoots there. But... like, the team is going to have to learn pretty quickly, and the management are going to have to learn pretty quickly. And I'm not just piling in on the manager. I won't be doing that. The players have to take blame because everybody was saying it was Dean Smith's fault, and that's why he got the sack. We still have the majority, the same core group of players, and the same stuff is happening. There has to be people on the field that need to take accountability as well. Yeah. And we're not digging players out. We're not digging a manager out here, but it's a collective effort to blame. And as I say, there's enough blame to fill an Olympic swimming pool out there. Yeah.
The bottom line is we went to a, let's face it, small town club, small-minded club. They couldn't, they loads of empty seats in their 11,000 seater stadium. This is not a hostile environment. This is Bournemouth that just come up from the championship and scored the fastest goal ever from somebody coming up from the championship to the Premier League. It's the quickest anyone has ever scored after being promoted. So people are wounded. Fans are wounded from the money they've had to add on for their season ticket this year. I'm telling you now, that if we play like that next weekend, things could get toxic very, very quickly. In some situations, it was toxic anyway. Like, at the moment, I'm looking forward to getting over and seeing my friends. I'm not overly bothered about... I'm actually worried about what the atmosphere might be like if we don't hit the ground running on Saturday. Thankfully, it's an early kickoff, so people won't be full of shandies. So it won't be as raucous. But, you know, it could turn sour very quickly, bearing in mind that people are hurting from last weekend. They're hurting from the extra money they have to pay. They're hurting for what all this new gear is costing from Castor. So, look, there's a lot of play. I'm not overly optimistic going into next weekend. I don't see how he turns this around very quickly. He cancelled the game against Liverpool yesterday. Maybe he shouldn't. I don't know why he cancelled it, but he did.
So that to me makes loads of sense. He wanted to get that was only over there for fitness. And then that was another comment. I will give him a pass on that one. That was misconstrued, I think, online, where he said the team don't need minutes, they just need quality. And then everybody went, oh, he's talking about selling the whole team and buying a whole new team and more quality players, and the players aren't quality. I just thought that was a game that was brought for fitness purposes. He didn't see that the team were unfit. He needs them to work on the quality of their delivery and their execution. Absolutely. I think that's what it was. And you can't throw out the same 11 against Liverpool and 11 the day after. It would be
no.
That to me would be, so he would have been playing different players, and you're kind of going, well, then it's not really made for that purpose, that game. So
I don't understand why there's 15 or 16 players in the squad that didn't get a game. So why not give them game time the next day? It just doesn't make sense to me. But look, he's the manager. He lives by the sword, dies by the sword. If he puts on a player next week that hasn't played any games, or has to play a player, say for example, has to play Ashley Young at one of the left fullback positions, and he's not up to it, then people are going to ask questions. Why didn't he give him 90 minutes last Sunday? But look,
I think it was only Young Tim and Kane Kessler Hayden that didn't play between the 23s and were part of the travelling squad. Mm. Yes, you had the likes of Nakamba and Sanson and all those guys as well. But look, they may not be long for the road. Here, I would imagine Sanson isn't. Yeah. Like, I'd love to know. Someone needs to ask a question about where Nakamba's gone to, like, because it's just been like radio silence on him.
And we won't find out this week because the media will be more interested in talking about his rivalry with Everton than they will about our players. So we might not find out until one of our own media guys asks him in the press on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. Right, we'll leave it at that, Paddy, or do we have anything else that we want to unpack?
I haven't much more to say, as I said. How many minutes did we get out of it?
Yeah, about 22 minutes out of it. For everybody listening to this, I know this is our third time doing a podcast. We normally only do one post-match, and I know some of you might be listening to this and go, oh, feck it, we've heard this. Like, we're not that we've heard this before, but look, can we just move on to the Everton game? And yes, please, we will, but I think that this was such a shock result for a lot of people, us included. And it was seismic in a way, because a lot of fans are talking about now, like, whoa, 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 like, are we smelling our own farts here, like, with regards to the team? What's the story? And I think that it just kind of deserved to have, number one, a kind of an immediate reaction, after watching the game where we could pinpoint Darius. And then I couldn't let Paddy not have his say in it as well, because of his lovely articulate nature that everybody seems to love in the podcast too.
Well, look, Neil, it's we're in one of those situations again where the one thing we love that always breaks our hearts, we'll get up and go again on Saturday and hope for the best. And it's the
it's the hope that kills you, Paddy. The last time we lost to Bournemouth in the Premier League, at the start of the season, we went to Everton and we beat them. That was in 2019. We lost to Bournemouth in the second game of the season. Third game of the season was Everton, and we went to beat him, and that's when Wesley got his goals.
I was at that Bournemouth game.
Yeah.
First game at home back in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Absolutely disgusted. It took an hour and 10 minutes to get through Whitton Lane Station. Thankfully, I don't have to worry about that on Saturday. There's no trains, which doesn't help.
Yeah. Like, it's your own fault for not staying in the social. Just that's the golden rule. Go to Villa Park, stay in the social.
Yeah, I don't think the fairer sex members of the family would be too happy with the raucous atmosphere after the game in the social. So we'll go to the nice plush hotel in the city centre for this one, and then myself and Stephen will love the social from the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, I'm just salty because I'm not able to go at the weekend, and it was looking like I was able to go. So I'm going to, and you know what the funny thing is? with the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturdays are really the bread and butter for us guys, especially coming over from Ireland. You know, it's difficult enough on a Sunday, and even for the 12:30 games, if you were coming over and going home the same day, you know, your flight comes in at 7 o'clock, but like you're just wrecked for those games. You can't really get much in into them. So,
and look, I remember back in the late 90s, being regularly put on the live games on Sundays and doing day trips and being wrecked Monday and Tuesday after these trips. Yeah. But we were winning, and it didn't bother me. It's when you're not performing, that's when it kills you. That's when it absolutely saps the life out of you. So at the moment, I've only planned for this game at the weekend, even though I have a season ticket, because it's virtually impossible, because I've got to get from one side of the country to the other, fly to Birmingham. Yeah. The airports are a shit show at the moment. So to do a day trip is absolute madness. So I can't get my head around it at the moment to even think about it. And then the one thing I was looking forward to, Notts Forest away, they moved to a bloody Monday night and absolutely killed me altogether.
I'd say it'll be like, it really, realistically, it could be closer to Christmas by the time I get to get over, and that's a bit of a sickener, but that just means I get to spend more time with you guys here talking shite before and after games, doesn't it? It's fantastic. But less about that. We will be live for Team Sheet Tantrum. We'll be back with an Everton preview. I'm going to do some bits and pieces on that over the next couple of days. Then we will have Team Sheet Tantrum. We will have a post-match review of Everton. Paddy, as I say, will be over there. We might be able to get him from the ground again like we did last season. That would be nice. And get him afterwards again then as well, just to see what... to get the feeling in the air after the game. That would be cool. If we can get you a signal, we will do that. But thanks so much, everybody, for watching and for listening. Oh, yeah, we launched a voicemail service that you guys can leave your voicemails at any time of day and night. And we're going to have a podcast solely dedicated to listening to those podcasts and trying to answer any questions. So if you want to have your say, you can find that. It's SpeakPipe. You'll be able to find it on the tweet that we have. I thought I had it here in a banner to run it across, but... you'll be able to find it in one of our tweets, and it's a bit of gas, and you'll be able to leave us a voicemail, and we'll listen to it then in a podcast maybe later on in the week once they build up. But anyway, thanks very much everybody for everything you do for the podcast. Really appreciate it. Stay safe, and until next time, all that's left to say is up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Podcast Network.